Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back in. The Lions 24/7 podcast is here with a fresh episode to start off the final week of spring practice for Penn State football. Happy to report that barring any change of plans, Sean Fitz and myself both back in Beaver Stadium on Saturday for the culmination practice number 15 of the spring schedule for Penn State. Not being billed as that big blue-white game festivity, but an event inside Beaver Stadium that will feature a mix of fans and students and something that's just a little bit different than what we got to see in 2020. So, as we said, a step forward ahead. While Penn State settles in for this last week of spring practices, a couple former Nittany Lions finding their new college homes. We got a lot to talk about recruiting-wise in just a moment, but we'll start there, Sean. Zach Kuntz, TJ Jones, guys who were on this Penn State roster just last season, announcing in a matter of, I don't know, less than 24 hours apart from each other, that they are moving on and taking a step down in terms of the FBS landscape.
Yeah, it's still FBS. These schools were bouncing a couple of years back, but Zach Kuntz going to go to Old Dominion. Obviously, the connection there, Ricky Ronnie, but if you dig deeper, I mean, he's got to be very familiar with the scene down there in Norfolk. Kirk Campbell's the offensive coordinator here. He was an analyst at Penn State for a few years. A couple of GA, offensive GAs are now position coaches there, and Mark Dupuy and Kevin Reiner. And, there's actually a lot going on at Old Dominion that, and Michael Schuster, that was the obvious one. His high school quarterback also played quarterback at Penn State, now an offensive GA there. So there's a lot going on down in Norfolk that where Zach Kuntz can connect to, and that makes sense. It's interesting to me when we first heard about him going into the portal, there were a few schools that needed tight ends very badly. And I don't know that that's the best situation for Zach to walk into. We mentioned specifically LSU, which I think has one scholarship tight end, on the roster this spring. And now they're waiting to see what Eric Gilbert's going to do, obviously. But I mean, that's a situation where you're basically a rental. And if you don't really pass the guy in front of you, you don't fit in with what they're trying to do. I mean, that could be a recipe for a miserable year for him. So I think dropping down, he can have some success. Obviously, we saw a similar situation a few years ago. The circumstances were different, but Adam Brenneman dropping to UMass and having a tremendous finish to his college career. I still think Zach has potential. I think he's got a lot to work with in terms of size, athleticism, all those things that we've checked the boxes for over the years. But this one, it's going to be fun to see how it works out. He's a hardworking kid. He's a smart kid. Obviously, a lot to like. Just kind of the total package there, but could never really break through. And if you look at Penn State's tight end room, it didn't really seem like it was going to happen anytime soon. So certainly all the best to Zach. He's been, he hasn't contributed on the field, he's been a great guy to work alongside with and has always been good to us. So we certainly wish him the best of luck. And I think it's a good fit.
We've talked about Kuntz's potential for several years now. And we talked about it when he entered the transfer portal this winter at 6'7". A guy who in 3 years at Penn State, very much overshadowed by the kid who came in with him in 2018, Pat Freiermuth, and eventually Penn State seemingly recruiting over Zach Kuntz in terms of what they were getting on the practice field, what they're getting on game days. And Zach Kuntz going to head down there with 3 years of eligibility. It feels like he's been around college football for a while, but because of a redshirt year, because of 2020 and what the NCAA did there, he's a sophomore still in the eyes of eligibility. So an opportunity ahead of him at Old Dominion. It's a place that fellow former Penn State blue chip prospect Ricky Slade landed when he transferred out of Penn State at the running back position. We learned this winter, Ricky Slade no longer on that roster at Old Dominion. But, very clearly the connections that Ricky Ronnie made during his time on campus and while recruiting some of these guys, he's parlayed that into some additions. It didn't pan out with Ricky Slade. It looked like a pretty splashy move for the program down there in Norfolk. But Zach Kuntz, a guy that you know you would imagine here, that you just ran off all the different connections. If it's going to work out, this seems to be a spot that could happen. And then TJ Jones is a guy who came in a year after Zach Kuntz as part of that 2019 class, Sean. Him and John Dunmore, the only wide receivers to sign with Penn State in the 2019 cycle. TJ Jones was a late addition in that class and brought in by one position coach, ends up working with a couple different position coaches, and by the end of the process plays in 9 Penn State games. Does not record a single catch during his college career here with the Nittany Lions. He's going to the University of Alabama, Birmingham, and Conference USA. So again, 2019 class, Dunmore set to start his career at FAU this year, I believe. And then TJ Jones heading down a level as well. Both staying in the FBS, but neither recording a catch in a Penn State uniform and then departing the Power 5 scene pretty quickly.
It's certainly a miss there in that 2019 class, and receivers seemed like a fairly important position. And now, granted, they came behind it in the 2020 class, Parker Washington, Keandre Lambert-Smith, some other guys as well. And I think that probably has something to do with why TJ Jones was looking for another place to play this season. But I mean, he was always a good football player, a guy that when you put on the tape seemed to have a higher floor than Dunmore. But it really never worked out. He's going to be closer to home. He's going to have a chance to develop, and still he's got freshman eligibility, so plenty of time to go. It was interesting because last spring he was at the top of our projected depth chart. Now, that didn't say much in terms of what Penn State was trotting out there at receiver, but this is a guy that they gave a shot to. He really didn't keep up with the Washingtons, Lambert Smiths, and some of those other guys. Got some run, mostly on special teams, but I mean, that's just the nature of the position right now. Is it's really competitive and it's really athletic, and you know, you fall behind, and that's the sort of thing that can happen.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that projected depth chart. It was, you know, Penn State's official depth chart they put out in the day that would have been the blue-white game last year. Remember, they did some kind of virtual blue-white game deal with Zoom and fans and coaches and players. But that same day, they also did give us a little bit of insight into the roster with the depth chart. And when we saw that, you saw TJ Jones listed as a starter, and by the end of the year, you kind of forgot that he was a part of it. He got out there, he saw some snaps during the course of the season, wasn't completely restricted to the sideline, but again, no catches, and a guy that by the end of the year, you really had to know who you were looking for to really be aware that TJ Jones was a part of the plan at wide receiver over the course of the 2020 season, Sean. So he'll move forward with another program. Zach Kuntz will move forward with another program, and we're starting to get some answers on where guys are going to land for this 2021 year. Remember, a lot of guys already have found their homes. Judge Culpepper moved on to Toledo. You had Antonio Shelton end up with the Florida Gators. Lance Dixon with West Virginia. Might be missing a couple here in between, but it's nice to see guys find that next spot, because the later you get, you kind of were wondering about some of these players not going to be with the program for spring practice. All of a sudden, spring semesters are starting to creep up near their conclusion across colleges, and you hope that things would work out where a guy is finding that second opportunity, because you certainly do not want to go into the summer without a concrete plan if you're a guy who wants to play college football this fall.
It's a heck of a filibuster, sir. As my kid gets home, my dog barks, and you just talk over all of it to make us sound like that we're a seemingly well-oiled machine. So I appreciate the covering on that one. But yeah, these guys are popping up, and a lot of them dropping down. I mean, obviously Shelton's the one that kind of turned heads with him going to Florida. For the most part, you're looking for a place to play. That's kind of what the portal is there for. And that's where we see Penn State's portal transitions finding themselves here at the into spring.
We will circle back to the transfer portal for a mailbag question a little bit later on, but there is big recruiting news on the horizon in the NCAA, some long-awaited recruiting news, and we're going to discuss that in a moment. But in case you didn't get enough of Brian Doan on our last episode of the Lions 24/7 podcast, the National 24/7 Sports Recruiting Analyst was on a phone call with Sean Fitz earlier today on Monday, and Sean said, "You want to push record again?" And so you did.
Yeah, that's it was just funny because we were talking and he had so many of these notes, because I mean, let's be honest, we haven't had events like this for over a year now. So it was just a little refreshing sort of conversation in terms of, oh, we can actually talk about football. So I was like, hey, let's come on this. He joined Blair and Angulo for the 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Podcast. Talk a little bit more in depth about Anthony Ivey and Mekhi Flowers and Ken Talley. We covered some different things. I mean, obviously, we covered the commits, but we covered a few different things, targets, a few overarching themes in recruiting as we do. Don't typically like to have somebody on back to back, but if it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Dome, because the response we got from him being on the last episode last week was really good. And hopefully this one will follow it up pretty nicely.
Well, here is that conversation you had with Brian. And as you said, fresh off the camp circuit, we hope to have more news coming off of fields at different camps in the coming months. This is a great start. And here is Brian Dome breaking down the latest from the recruiting trail.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Well, we just had him on last episode, but he was so great, we decided to bring him back. Also, to be quite honest with you, Tyler and I, not a ton to talk about today. And then I was talking to Brian Doan of 24/7 Sports, who we welcome in now on the Lions 24/7 Podcast. I was talking to him earlier today. He's like mentioning all these things from this event he went to this weekend, and a lot of it's Penn State related. So I was like, hey, why don't we take up a little bit more of your time, get you back on the podcast? And you were like, awesome. And definitely enthused about it. So Brian, thank you for coming back on and joining us twice in a week.
Oh, what an honor it is. And, you know, I just hope either Amazon or FedEx stop by today again.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun with us over on this side. You know that. But Brian Dome was in the Philadelphia area this weekend, 7-on-7 tournament. Our buddy Ed O'Brien has been running that one for a while now. Good to see some guys running around and just kind of feeling some normalcy there, but some real talent on hand on, I think it was Saturday or Sunday, that you were down in Conshohocken.
Yeah, and it was a good time. And you're right, man. It was great to see, whether it was the Evolve kids from Pittsburgh or you know, some of the Philly guys or next level greats from Jersey. And then there happened to be this little team from, well, for me, it's Central Pennsylvania. I'll probably get ripped for it from other people where it's not. But it was some kid named Anthony Ivey, another kid named Mekhi Flowers. And joining them was a Philadelphia kid named Ken Talley, which I'm sure Penn State fans know a little bit about those three.
Yeah, there's I think they've come up a time or two in this cycle. You and I were talking offline, and we've been following these guys, and it's funny because we've been following these guys for a while, but haven't really gotten a chance to get out and see them. So some changes, some physical changes, some, oh, that's right, oh, we forgot he was really, really good type things. And Anthony Ivey was the guy that blew you away.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was joking with Anthony before I saw him play on Sunday. And I said, yo, I was supposed to come watch you play in your opener. And I called out there and they cut the cap from 500 to 250 for the game. So I couldn't get in. And geez, I felt like on Sunday there were more than 250 people on one field. So actually getting back to some normalcy. But listen, when I watched Ivy, and you know, you see his highlights and you see how well he does, you know, just in game film and everything. But to see how thick he is and how well he runs and his change of direction. And he made a couple catches that were just, I mean, they were hard catches because he was running at full speed and the ball was, you know, knee level, and he was able to bend and catch it. It was impressive. I really came away from that thinking, boy, we got this one right with his ranking, you know, which is, you know, he's pushing to be in the top 100 for us on 247 Sports. And to be honest, you know, there's 60 plus teams there. He's the alpha dog of the event. And I thought it was earned because he tracked the ball well. He caught the ball in traffic. He made plays down the field. He made plays short in the passing game. And he really getting in and out of his breaks. I was sitting talking with one of the, you know, other guys at the event watching him. And they're like, man, you see how quick he changes direction, can also get out of that break. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's what you wanted to see. And so it was great just to go out and see these kids. And Ivy really impressed me.
I think the easy comparison for Ivy for us, especially when we saw him in camp as a younger prospect, was Jahan Dotson. And it seems like he may have added some weight. I mean, what do you think there?
No, I know that, but he's now much thicker in the upper body. I thought Jahan was kind of, I thought his body was a little bit slight coming out of high school. I'd like to get some track times on him. But he is more, I'd put him closer to Godwin than I would Dotson right now, just because of his strength, his route running ability, and his hands.
That's certainly some praise. I mean, it would be praise either way, right. Both phenomenal receivers, but let's be clear. We're not lumping Anthony Ivey in as the next Chris Godwin, the next Jahan Dotson. Just,
I'm sure somebody here will, but no, we are not.
We'll leave that to Tyler, but no, it's it's a situation where we haven't seen these guys for a while. You haven't seen Ken Talley. You haven't seen Mekhi Flowers in a while. Talley puts up a picture and hey, look at this. He might actually be 6'3". We've been listing him at 6'3" this whole time. We've said, hey, he's probably somewhere between 6'1" and 6'3". He pops up. He's about your height.
He is. And he's thick, but not, you know, he's got a good physique. And he told me he was at 240. He dropped down to 235 now. He just showed up because Mekhi and Anthony wanted him to come hang out for the day. So he did, because they played Friday night. But yeah, I mean, you look at it and you say, you know, there's always questions. And that's why people are like, why do you want to get out to see events? And there's so many different reasons. But one is to eyeball them and make sure their size is legit. And so see him and seeing his size really was something that was important for the weekend. Just to see his stature, and he moved well. You know, when he ran some routes, he moved well. He looked flexible. So for me, even though he's not out there catching passes, it was good to see him move.
Yeah, and you picked up some buzz from those guys. They seemed just ready to be out of that cage and to hang out with some guys that, you know, are maybe they're Twitter friends with, or obviously commits in the same class. But it seems like they're out and about and trying to make that class grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to know that, like, if you're a Penn State fan, that this kid played a game on Friday and decided, hey, I'm going to, instead of, you know, just hanging out Sunday doing nothing, I'm going to go meet up with a few future teammates and have some fun and hang with them. And I think that's important. And then, you know, the buzz you get from some guys there and talking to some other people is, you know, Penn State is recruiting Nicholas Singleton, the running back out of Reading, Governor Mifflin in PA. And he's got an official visit there, and he's got a few others set. I think, what is it? Notre Dame, Ohio State, maybe Wisconsin. I'm old. So I'm old. So I may have forgotten one, but you know, going into it right now where things sit before you can get out on visits, everything I'm hearing out of there was Penn State sat in the best spot. Now, again, things change with visits and all that, and I get that. So I still feel good with my crystal ball, but also Penn State's done a really good job with him, and it seems like playing closer to home is important to him. I'm not going to say it's the end all be all, but I think there's a number of reasons why Penn State is doing well. And when you look at, you know, not only Ivy and Talley, you know, Bo Prabula recruiting, there's a lot of different reasons that I'm hearing that Singleton likes Penn State.
There's a lot of pull there, certainly. Also a lot of pull for a guy like Keenan Nelson, who you, I believe, have Penn State as the front runner there. You got a chance to see him this weekend.
I did get a chance to see him. He played more of a safety role. He looks good. You know, last time I was able to eyeball him was during the 2019 season. I saw him play back-to-back weeks, and he is, you know, he's a good-looking kid. He grew a little bit. I think he has some safety size. I could see him playing corner or safety at the college level. I think he's a guy that can play nickel. And he looked good driving on the ball. You know, from what I saw from him from the safety spot, he wasn't asked to really backpedal and flip his hips too much in that setting. But he looked like he could accelerate, and I liked the way he moved in it.
Don, did you find the next big thing from Pennsylvania? I know there were some guys from Western Pennsylvania that you got a chance to check out.
The next big thing. I just feel like that's such a cliche thing. I'm sure that you're ripping somebody.
It is dripping in cliche.
I'm sure you're ripping somebody, so I appreciate that. But listen, when that evolve team rolls in, out of Pittsburgh. You know, everybody, I'm sure anybody on Twitter knows Evolve, you know, two tenths recruiting and, I mean, training and all that stuff. Let me tell you something. A, to see Tamir Robinson in person, the safety out of Brashear out in Pittsburgh. Ay, 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 that kid. You want to diagram how they're supposed to look? Yeah, that's how they're supposed to look. He moves really well. I mean, if Ivy wasn't the alpha dog, Tamir Robinson would have been. I think there's a chance he'll grow into a linebacker. Obviously, he likes Penn State a lot with the Terry Smith connection and all that. But, you know, the other thing, and I know I texted you during the event to let you know, but, you know, Tyrese Fearby, who's also a kid out of Pittsburgh, who is really intriguing when you watch his film, and, you know, he's got some official setup, including one to Penn State, another one, I think, to South Carolina. You know, it was always his film's incredible. He looks big on film, but you never know until you know. Well, after seeing him, he's 6'4 to 6'5. Now, he played receiver. He's not a receiver, but you can see how he moved. He's legit, man. He reminded me from a frame standpoint and a length and all that of, was it Cameron Brown, the kid out of Maryland that went to Penn State a few years back and then went to the Giants? Yep, am I remembering that right?
You are.
That is the frame comparison for me. And he's got the ability to, you know, put on some weight, but I had heard from his trainers that his size was legit. I had heard from people out in Western PA, his size was legit. But, you know, when you're dealing with stuff like this, you always want to see it for yourself. And so I was really happy to see that. And I think, you know, luckily I was able to interview him. So the folks on Lions247 will be able to read about that in the next day or two. But beyond that, he's a guy that Penn State fans should start really paying attention to, because now that we know his size is legit, I think that should excite Penn State fans as this recruitment moves forward.
Especially at a position like defensive end. We put up our defensive end mini board, I believe, in late March. And Fearby is one of many guys that you're like, okay, is he 6'3"? Is he 6'5"? Is he this guy that we think can be a speed rusher? Can he bulk up and play at 265? You know, it's just, there's so many questions, especially with a position like that, where you've got long, lanky guys. You've got the short, stubby, strong side, you know, almost defensive tackle guys, where you're kind of all over the board. And it's such an important position, as we've seen over the last couple of cycles, and the more information that you can have, especially at defensive end, I mean, it obviously can go a long way in determining which way this cycle can go at that position.
No, without question. And you look at him, and so who is he? He's the kid that, you know, is going to be 6'4 to 6'5 and could be anywhere from 230, 235 to 250, depending on what you want to do with him. He's a guy that should be able to cover and drop back a little bit. And as you know, it's more now, you know, you want these guys who can be kind of like edge rushers, maybe drop into coverage a little bit. That's what you want from that position now, just so you can be a little bit multiple in what you do up front. And also, you know, just change some schemes. And I think he's that kid. I mean, he moved really well. You know, watching him warm up and stuff, you know, I know why he plays defense, but he was fluid and he moved really well. I liked him a lot.
Now, before we move on to one more topic, is there anybody else that jumped out? I know you've got your top performers list, which should be out by the time this podcast is out. Anybody else jump out to you, Penn State interest or otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, look at Western PA with some of the kids there. Lamont Payne, a cornerback, Berg area. Cameron Chetham, who is really somebody to watch out there, underclassman from Western PA. I liked him a lot. I mean, you know, and then you go closer to Philadelphia again, and Tasir Denmark, who's a 24 receiver at Roman Catholic, and you say, yeah, 24, whatever. And I get that, but man, watching this kid move and play, and Penn State is already on him and Rutgers is already on him. He is definitely a kid that should be a national recruit. And it's, you know, for a while, Fitz, we've talked about, oh, maybe Pennsylvania hasn't been producing a ton of high level elite kids. And so if you can find one that's a receiver who you think is going to be that, I think he's worth looking at. And then also keep an eye on Josiah Trotter, because, you know, when you're doing the 7-on-7 stuff and you're doing top performers, it's really hard for linebackers to get in. And Quentin Moore and Josiah Trotter both made it just because of how well they moved. And they did a lot of good things. And just in terms of change of direction and movement. And then Michael, and, you know, he's got Penn State in his top five, and we'll see how hard Penn State pushes for him, the defensive and outside linebacker out of Delaware. But he also looked really good moving in space. For me, it was good to see these kids move. And Michael Wing, I'll tell you right now, I think he's probably just pushing 6'3", just from talking to him for a little bit. I'd like to, you know, hopefully he'll go to a camp and measure in and all that stuff. But just to watch these guys move, and Micah did a really good job with change of direction and space from a linebacker spot. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff to see. It was nice to be out.
Wing seems, I mean, if he is 6'3", which, you know, you can play defensive end at 6'3", but it, you know, could he potentially be a linebacker? There's so many questions just seeing these guys, and obviously we're not the final decision makers on where they're going to play, who's going to offer scholarships and everything like that. But just seeing these guys has so much value from an evaluation standpoint. It's just, it's crazy to think how long we haven't had this, and now all of a sudden we're back into the mix.
Yeah, and you look at so Micah, you look at 6'3", and it's not so much the 6'3", it's the length, right? And so, and he's got the length. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a plus five when it comes to his length with his height, but, you know, he's got enough. He's got the athleticism, and you could see him playing in a couple of roles, whether it's, you know, to me right now, he looks more like a hybrid who can come off the edge and drop back into coverage. And that's fine. He's got a frame that is, you know, to me, and I think I mentioned this last time I was on, to me, it's his frame reminds me of my recollection of Shaka Toney in high school. And like I said, I don't remember how tall Shaka was, but that's what my recollection was. And after seeing him this weekend, I still feel the same way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, you mentioned the Rutgers reference a little bit. You was kind of in passing. They've now got the number 6 class in the country, right above Penn State's number 7. Now, numbers being what they are has something to do with that. But
correct.
All of a sudden, Greg Schiano is doing a heck of a job there.
Yeah, he is. And I think, you know, I was on a national podcast with Blair talking about it a little bit. And the one thing with Rutgers is, you know, you always – you saw them was in the Big East. And I think, you know, you go back to that Louisville game that every Rutgers fan wants to point to. And I think like 18 of the 21 starters in that game, or 22 starters, wound up playing in the NFL. So you look at it and you say, okay, what can he do with the Big Ten? And that's what the question is. And listen, aside from all that, for the first time in their existence, they're paying market value for coaches, and they have a deep, you know, a deep staff, a deep recruiting staff of, you know, and a lot of guys joining the program to help behind the scenes. And that's what you need if you're going to compete in the Big Ten. So, you know, it's one class. We're halfway through it. We'll see how it finishes. But you know, I think you'll probably hear their name mentioned a little bit more with kids in the region and top schools.
But how'd they get the quarterback?
I mean, did you watch Rutgers last season? The kid wants to play early. Their offensive coordinator is creative, right? He's supposed to be a young mind.
Great coach. Yeah.
I mean, you know, was at Princeton, did well there, went to Oklahoma State. Rutgers bought him out of Oklahoma State to bring him to Rutgers, which again talks about the money. And so they've put together a good class with skill guys, but I mean, their quarterback play has, you know, it's been bad. And if you look at, you know, what other schools he was looking at, they had a lot more quarterback depth with Cincinnati and Kentucky. And it just goes back to it. Like, they have a staff that really does a good job recruiting. You know, Penn State fans always hear about Elijah Robinson with Texas A&M, and it drives them insane. And I get why. But Fran Brown is also a really good recruiter who has helped a ton. They have Augie Hoffman, who was at St. Joe's Montvale. Penn State fans, we met, you know, Robert Martin, who went to Penn State, was from Montvale. You know, they also have Vanover's there, right? Vilbert Smith. So guys, you know, they have guys that can really recruit, and that's important. And they've spent, listen, man, they've spent a ton of time recruiting and working hard. And so, you know, that's how they were able to get the quarterback, is they were just really diligent and the quarterback connected with them.
I really didn't expect you to lead with a Robert Martin reference out of St. Joe's Montvale, but here we are. So.
I did that just for you.
I appreciate that. Hey, real quick before we get out of here, right. A report this morning from Dennis Dodd says the end of the dead period on the table this week. Is there light at the end of the tunnel there?
There is, but it's like we spoke about last time. You know, let's see what it is, because I spoke to a coach over the weekend about this, and they said when you're trying to set up what you should do to avoid, you know, having COVID in your program and kind of transferred from one person to another, it's, you know, be careful with your meetings and keep space and do as little meeting in the same room as possible and don't eat together. Well, what do you do on official visits?
That's all you do is eat
and meet with the coaches. And so we'll see how schools handle it. We'll see if the NCAA allows official visits. The one good thing about the NCAA is, you know, they'll be right on top of it and make sure everything is clear with exactly what kids will be allowed to do. Oh. And you know, if the deadline is through May 31st, I'm guessing about May 30th at 4:30, they'll release what the rules really are.
As long as that's a Friday, that's all that matters. So,
all I know is, I look forward to whatever vacation you're going on June 1st.
I cannot wait. Don, I know it's been two episodes in a row, but two really, really information-packed episodes. Thank you very much for joining us. And you can catch Don on the site all the time. He's dropping knowledge like crazy on there. And you find him on Twitter at BrianDone247. He's going to be out and about with some more events this spring, and we can't wait to bring him back on.
Hey, appreciate the 5 minutes you gave me today.
yes, I did set you up for a 5-minute conversation. Not sure how long we've gone, but I'm sure the people appreciate it.
Thanks, man. I always love being out with you guys.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS, here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to the Lions 24/7 podcast. Thanks to Brian Doan once again for joining us. Always good conversation when it's Doan on the horn. So, thanks for that. We did mention the news of the week, I guess we could label it as it seems like the NCAA is about ready to move forward by opening up the dead period, on June 1st. Obviously such a huge thing, official visits, camps, possible evaluation days, which, you know, if that comes to fruition, we'll talk more about that in future episodes because it can be a really, really big deal for college coaching staffs, and we'll talk about what that entails if it does actually happen. Some official visit news over the weekend. Steve Wiltfong was at another camp in Ohio. Emil Wagner, offensive lineman from Ohio, has set up his Penn State official visit, so check that out on the site as well. But yeah, that's sort of a light at the end of the tunnel, as Don alluded to, finally getting to the point where we can start maybe planning our summer.
You mean we're almost caught up to that carrot on the end of the stick? We're actually almost there, because it's been a long time, Mr. Fitz.
It's going to be yanked away, no question whatsoever. But no, it's almost there. And like we mentioned, I mean, just the prospect of going to camps, the prospect of seeing these guys in person, from a recruiting standpoint, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have feet on the ground and outside of Philadelphia in a couple of weeks for that Elite 11 camp. We had Brian Doan attending a camp, Steve Wiltfong attending a camp, and I'm just thinking about where we were sitting last spring, wondering when the heck we would get a chance to see camps again. It's great for the recruits. It's great for us and what we do in coverage. And it's also extremely good news for coaching staffs like the one here at Penn State, trying to glean information and the latest insight about player development, player progress. And what better way to do that than to actually get these kids onto your campus once again, where you can meet with them face to face. And we're looking at, you know, the June 1st launch of the post emergency dead period as just a substantial event that I don't think a lot of us have witnessed in college football because of the wait time. 15 months, Sean, when you go back to when the NCAA instituted this emergency dead period. So much has happened. You've had an entire class, the class of 2021, sign with their schools without ever getting a chance to use official visits. We'll find out about the ramifications of that for rosters in the years ahead. But here you go for your 2022 class and a program like Penn State, where you've got plenty of that foundation already built up and you got a lot of that peer recruiting and networking done. This is where you're looking to capitalize in June with these official visits, with the chance to get guys to campus. And we're going to learn a lot more. NCAA has a lot to explain on what the plan is for the remainder of the summer and what they plan to do and washing away some other dead periods. Are you going to open the door for camps? A lot to learn still, Sean. But when we talk about a dead period that was extended 8 different times, and you almost felt like the postponement was always around the corner for that date, for them to say May 31st, and this is not official yet, but anticipating it will become official this week at some point, to say May 31st is it, and then you get some sort of green light, may come with some caveats, it will come with some caveats. It's huge news, and it's great for our listeners and our audience as well, because going to give us a lot to dive into that we simply have not had the chance to do earnestly in just about 2 years.
Well, let's be selfish. It's great for us too. Oh, yeah. So we certainly can't ignore that. But no, there's a lot to learn on many levels, because is it a sprint right into June? I mean, can you knock out 3 or 4 commitments from guys that you have visiting over the first couple of weeks in June? What's the hit rate look like? Do these guys want to dive into visits and then all of a sudden say, oh, well, there's several options nationwide that I want to check out, maybe on unofficials, or, okay, that's a great base for my recruiting in terms of what I've learned about these campuses. Now, do I want to wait until the fall and check out games? And on the flip side, these coaches, you know, you have a certain number of scholarships that you're working with. Do you press for this guy? Do you, you know, sort of get this guy on campus and, you know, maybe he moves down the board based on what you've experienced over that weekend. So there's a lot of different angles that you could really work here. It's going to be entertaining, no doubt about it. But yeah, a lot can change on this recruiting board over the course of a month, and still don't know what they're going to do with July. Still don't know how things are going to ramp up into the season. But until then, I mean, it's just the fact that we seem to be one step closer to this June 1st opening up it's really a relief for a lot of prospects.
And at this point, there's probably about a couple dozen names that have been, you know, put on that schedule for June and tentatively scheduled for those official visits over the course of these different weekends. And we spotlighted some of these weekends, and the last one of that month of June is going to be kind of a reunion isn't even the right word, because they haven't been together in one spot, but you're going to have a gathering of commitments. And then the preceding weekends, bunch of priority guys coming through from in the region, from outside the region. You get some Florida guys up, some Texas guys in the mix. And Sean, you're putting together this tracker for the official visits, and there was a little while there in late March into like early April as well, where it felt like just about every day you had somebody from somewhere in the country confirming their plans to check out Happy Valley in person.
I mean, that's what you got to do to get some of those guys, especially from out of the region, onto campus. And I don't know, because Don and I talked about it last week, what happens if they say, okay, you guys can take visits, but not official visits, because the schools are on the hook for these sort of things. So that could change some things right there in terms of what your recruiting pool looks like. You know, guys like Julian Humphrey from Texas and Jordan Allen from Louisiana, some of those Florida guys that you mentioned as well. So it's going to be, I don't want to say you're kind of walking on eggshells waiting for that to happen, but if official visits aren't a possibility, that certainly changes some things. But for a school like Penn State, who has recruited the way that they've recruited, basically for their history in terms of leaning on that region, 6 hours hours from campus and in. You still got a bunch of guys like Danai Dennis-Sutton, like Nick Singleton, those big fish that are still out there in the region that can still technically get to campus unofficially. So all would not be lost, but you certainly want to have those official visits if you're Penn State.
Official visits are going to do a lot to provide clarity on where things stand with your big board, but how about actually building that big board, not just for the 2022 cycle, but certainly the ones beyond it, Sean? I think the next question is, what about camps? What about being able to assess talent and be able to do that as a collective staff? Let's remember, about half this coaching staff has not been a part of a prospect assessment experience in Happy Valley, where you're gathering as a group and you're seeing these guys and you're getting measurements and you're gathering that weekend to talk about what you just experienced. Taylor Stubblefield feels like he's been around here for a while. He hasn't been here for a Penn State camp. Add Phil Troutwine, John Scott, Anthony Poindexter, Ty Howell to that list as a position coach in Howell's case. And it's just a tremendous opportunity for any coaching staff, but I think it's particularly important to be able to have that experience and really get on the same page and maybe have some of those debates and arguments as a staff about who you like as the final guy at a position that, you know, what's your cutoff? Who do you want? Who do you not want in terms of offered players? And those are the kind of things you can hash out together coming out of these camps. And it's not something you've been able to experience as a staff since 2019.
Yeah. And I mean, what, Taylor Stubblefield was hired in January. I don't know that he hosted an offered wide receiver. I know John Scott hasn't hosted any of his defensive line targets. Obviously that, you know, the new guys that have come in, Ty Howe and Poindexter, haven't hosted any of their guys. So there's a lot of changes there. And you look at what's still out there, not in terms of Penn State's board, but in terms of Penn State's availability for scholarships. Obviously, you're not going to take another quarterback, but you still want a couple of running backs. Wide receiver always open, as we talked about, I think, in the mailbag last week, because of that athleticism and that versatility. Offensive line still wide open. Defensive line still wide open. More of an emphasis on defensive end. Defensive tackle is still, you know, a little bit lower on the board for Penn State.
Defensive back.
Defensive back, linebacker, everywhere basically is open. And you've got, what, 7 or 8 commits right now. So every space that you take from here, if you're angling for a class of 20 guys or whatever, and that's still a very loose working number because, you know, you have to take into account the portal and things like that. Every spot that you take for a position, you know, it's going to have an effect on somebody else. So that might change some things down the ride, down the line. I mean, you could say, okay, you've got the 3 receivers right now and maybe you only want to take 4. Maybe you want to hold up with 3. I don't know. It's one of those things where several things can move based on the feelings that you get from these prospects, based on the evaluations that you get from some of these prospects, and a lot can change before now in the first game.
We've still got about 7 weeks before the conclusion of this dead period. So, let's see what happens. Let's see what the plan is. The NCAA oftentimes can struggle to put out a cohesive plan ahead of time. So we'll be waiting in the nuggets and seeing what Penn State's going to be able to do, what they won't be able to do, and then get a better read off of that. Certainly going to be a topic of conversation moving forward with this podcast. And Sean, moving toward the weekend with this podcast, we're going to get a chance to get back in Beaver Stadium. I know we're both excited to do that and just get some eyeballs on this team, see what the guys look like on a football field. And it's going to be a scrimmage setting. It's going to be, you know, again, a glorified practice, and not as glorified as usual because the blue-white game won't be what we expect it to be. But Sean, going into the stadium Saturday, we're not going to leave knowing everything. I'm not sure what exactly we will learn. But again, that's practice number 15. And I think that at the very base level, what we learned is that Penn State just got 15 practices in on the field together as a staff, as a roster. And that's just a major momentum swinger for you know, not just them, but on campuses across college football.
We're talking baby steps here after missing all 15 last March. And let's be honest, I mean, we can fill the listeners in here. We don't know what to expect in terms of how they're going to run the practice, how they're going to run the scrimmage, what we're going to get out of it, what we're going to do. I mean, you and I are going with the hope of doing some sort of show centered around the scrimmage. Do we get enough out of it for a show? I don't know. So we will see what happens when we get out of there Saturday and try and make a plan going forward. We're not trying to hold you in the dark in terms of what's happening, but, you know, we're pretty much right there as it is.
Yeah. Well, we're just glad to get the invite, and we'll see what we actually encounter on Saturday. That'll be early afternoon. Follow us on the website as well. We'll be certainly posting on the message board on some things we observe, and we'll see what comes out of it. And certainly will be the center of discussion on whatever podcast we do next up after this weekend. Looking at the five-star mailbag, Sean, and it brings us back to the transfer portal. The question here, by the way, you can put yours up there on Apple Podcasts, drop your five-star rating and review, throw your question in there. We could use some coming out of spring practice. There's some new topics to discuss, so don't be shy. Join the conversation by doing that. Question here, which transfer departure do you think Penn State will feel the impact of most in 2021? We mentioned a few at the top of the show, some guys that have found their home. Sean, where does the conversation take you here? I think it's worth noting again, a lot of these guys taking a step down in terms of the FBS competition, a few remaining at the Power 5 level, and I go toward one of those guys, Will Levis, now at Kentucky, because of what we don't know about the quarterback room right now, and that's something we've discussed at length on this show. To me, on the surface, knowing what we know about this team coming out of spring practice and almost coming out of spring practice, I lean toward Will Levis as being the one that maybe the absence stands out more than the others at this point.
That's the way that I would go, undoubtedly. Just in terms of what you're looking at as competition for Sean Clifford in the spring. I mean, we're talking about the potential of bringing in a portal quarterback to compete or do whatever he's going to do in the fall season. I mean, if Levis is still here, that's conversation has changed completely. So I think that's the obvious one. With CJ Thorpe, obviously, you're getting Eric Wilson in on the interior line. So that kind of, negates that one in terms of, I think you and I were both extremely high on CJ Thorpe, never really came together, but you know, there's talent there and you're going to lose on your offensive line, which is kind of the same story with Antonio Shelton. Is I don't know if this guy was going to be a start. I don't know if this guy was going to be a big contributor, a huge contributor or anything like that. But those bodies and those experienced bodies on the inside of that, on the interior of both lines, are certainly ones that we, would notably feel the impact of, moving forward. Lance Dixon is another one that I still think has a ton of growing to do, but I also think he has a ton of talent. And you look at what Penn State's going with in this spring with five linebackers on scholarship that are healthy. Certainly could have used Lance Dixon out there this spring.
That's an excellent point. And do you think James Franklin tells us last week that Curtis Jacobs is, penciled in as the starter if Lance Dixon is still here on campus?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting to know too. CJ Thorpe, by the way, just did a quick search, still has not found a home. I wanted to make sure we didn't miss that along the way, but has not found a spot as he continues his career. And he mentioned this when he transferred, that he wants to play on the defensive line moving forward in college football, somewhere he played a little bit during the 2018 season with Penn State football. So there are our thoughts. Will Levis, front and center here in 2021, and I think you make a great point with linebacker depth and really Lance Dixon still having all these years of eligibility ahead of him. Long term, he's the name that probably jumps out to me. Wide receiver, tight end, losing guys earlier we talked about. We're not running toward that spot right now based on what they have on the roster. Sean, I think we'll leave it there with the podcast, leave it there with the mailbag. Anything else to add here? Again, we had a bit of a rundown, and then you were like, I just spoke with Brian, let's blow it up a little bit. So we have some things we're pushing toward later in the week, but anything else to add before we get out of here this time around?
Blow it up a little bit. Yeah, completely changed the, the format of the show, and hey, it saved you some time as well. So,
it works.
But no, I enjoy the conversation we have with Brian, and hopefully we can get more timely stuff. I know that we're going twice a week in the off season, so it's not always going to be the most exciting content that we can throw out there, but anytime that we can get something that's timely, I think that's something that we'll hop on and jump forward to. So thanks to Brian for joining us. And again, I thought it was another quality episode.
Double dip with Doan. We'll focus on the spring scrimmage coming our way and looking at some questions that we expect to linger beyond spring camp. That'll be coming your way later here on the Lions 24/7 podcast, back with the second episode this week. And then we're back in the Beaver Stadium to finish things off on Saturday. So we'll talk to you real soon. On behalf of Sean Fitz, thanks again to Brian Doan. Thanks to you, our listeners. I'm Tyler Donahue. We'll talk to you real soon. right here on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.